Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from Dogworks Radio in Willow, Alaska. And on the line is Iditarod and Yukon Quest musher, the Gypsy Musher himself, Hugh Neff. Hugh, how's it going?
Hey, good morning, Robert. Just hanging out here in the doggy playground playing with some puppies.
No better way
to start the day.
That's what I was going to say. How is it going out there with those pups early in the morning? Are you feeding or are you just hanging out?
No, I already fed a while ago. I'm actually on a swing set that we had built this summer, and that way they can't chew at my shoelaces. But they're running around with me, and, you know, I'm a big believer that the more time you spend with puppies, you know, up until a year old, it's just the greater a dog you're creating.
You know, I saw that swing set that you had built. I think you had a picture of some of your visitors that came up. It looks kind of like the gnome arch there. Is that your inspiration for that?
No, it's actually, you know me, man, I got no money. I'm probably the poorest musher in the world that's ever been able to do both races year after year, but you know, through the grace of the great almighty, I get it done. This is just a neighbor was throwing it away, and I drove by and I said, hey, what are you doing with that swing set? And he is actually a former fellow from Russia that moved here from Delta Junction, and he said, go ahead, take it if you want it. So my buddy John helped me haul it over here, and then we just hoisted it up here. It's got a nice little tower that I like for sort of like a food cache. Fun to go up there and take pictures of the dogs and play with the dogs.
Very cool.
It's all about keeping it light and happy, though. That's what I'm always trying to do, and, you know, I get a lot of visitors that bring kids, and I always want to keep them preoccupied so they don't mess with the dogs too much.
Of course. So we're heading into fall. We were talking right before airtime. It's still pretty warm over that way.
Yeah, it's way warm. It's 70s right now. I've been in shorts pretty much every day this summer. Folks down south think 70s, probably nippy. For us in Alaska, 70s, Miami weather for me.
It is. And of course, with that, it comes hard to run the dogs, especially if it's not raining. Is that right?
Yeah, but I you know, they're going to get their 5,000 miles of training and racing every winter. So for me, I'll do some runs in the summer, but predominantly a lot of it's just day-to-day loose running around the yard. I got 5 acres here. You've been to my place. And I usually let 3 to 5 out at a time, depending on age. And, you know, Walter's my puppy den mother, so he'll take care of the pups. He's a great herding dog as well as a leader. And then my older dogs, I'll let loose a few at a time to run around, and they like to do a little circle around the cabins. And then my wilder dogs that are a little bit more wolf-like are the ones that I'll put in the pens, and they can play in the pens for a few hours. But realistically, when it's so warm out, you know, after about 5-10 minutes, they're panting so heavy, they're just looking for some shade to lie down and take it easy.
Right. Do you, I know we've talked about this many a times before, but do you change your feeding schedule up in the summer, especially when it's warm like this?
Oh, yeah, big time. Feed by 9 in the morning at the latest, and don't really feed until about 9 at night at the earliest. Just because of the heat, they get finicky, and I just think it's not creating good habits by trying to feed them at noon on a hot day. I don't think it's very good for a dog to be doing that. And primarily, you know, besides Red Paw Kibble, I do a lot of fish in the summer. We've got the Copper River just south of here, so I can get a lot of fish from there. And I get so much food from different people around Tote that, relatively speaking, I think my dogs probably eat better than any other dogs on the planet this time of year. Hey, sounds like they got a little meat in them, doesn't it?
But it does.
You know, they're eating duck and moose and caribou, and I get lots of freezer burn scraps. So that, along with the kibble, and they're got tons of energy. So this time of year, I'm really concentrated more than anything on puppy training. That's really what it's all about.
So we're heading into or to the wind down of the tourist season. You had mentioned that it's been pretty busy for you. What's happening in the next couple? What's happening in the next few weeks as we head into Labor Day? How are things going? Are you still doing your talks there nightly at the hotel there?
Yeah, I've been doing that, and it's exhausting, and I lose my voice about once a week nowadays because I'm talking for two to three hours a night, basically, and the show is only supposed to be an hour, but you know me, once I get going, the gift of gab takes over, and just want to make sure that everybody's enjoying their vacation to Alaska. So it's been a lot of fun. I had a group of Amish people a couple weeks ago, about 50 people. That was pretty interesting, and had all types of folks from all over the world, really. It's pretty neat, though. I'd say almost every night I've got one couple at least that comes in and tells me that they've been married longer than I've been alive, which in this day and age is pretty much a miracle. But, you know, for our father's generation, that's fairly normal. But it's been put it this way, I met a guy yesterday, 75 years old, looked, you know, as fit as any athlete. He was a preacher from Canada, played tennis 2 hours a day every day, and he was just totally into the whole dog mushing world just for the fitness aspect of it and how we stay in shape. And he asked me, well, what do you do to stay in shape yourself? And I said, well, I have to take care of 40 dogs, so you get a little bit of a workout doing that every day.
That is true.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun doing that. We're actually winding down, though. I'll be taking a few weeks off before we head over to Germany on the 16th, and our tour expanded from Germany to Netherlands, Belgium, and we're actually going up into central England as well. So it's going to be an exhausting 2 weeks, but I really enjoy doing it. It's a privilege and an honor to be a musher and to share my stories and our way of life up here. It just never ceases to bore me. I always love doing it.
So the last time we spoke, you said that you were bringing Walter the Wonder Dog along with you. Is that still the plan?
Oh, yeah. Walter will be coming. Walter loves people. He just gets bored with the whole Tickers deal. I think sooner or later, you wonder if this whole Facebook and Instagram and all the Twitter and all that, this phenomenon is ever going to mellow out and where people won't spend their whole lives looking through a camera lens. But I make sure that people get a picture with him more than me. He's the star of the show. There's lots of mushers in Alaska, but there's only one dog like Walter to me.
That's right. So when you're heading over there to England, last time we spoke, you were still looking for some kennel help or a handler. Has that worked its way out?
Oh, yeah. I've got some folks that are actually, I met through a buddy of mine, Jimmy, who I worked with up in Coldfoot many, many years ago, and they're going to be coming up here. They're a retired military, and they want to get into the mushing scene. They live in Salcha now, and they've already came up a week or so ago. We went on a dog run. I really need, obviously, help, you know, running dogs. A lot of my competition has half a dozen to a dozen people working for them, where I'm typically trying to do this with just me and one or two other people. I really love the privacy and being with the dogs all the time. I'm sort of a hermit, believe it or not, but obviously once the training season gets underway, the more hands you can have around, not only to help hook up teams, but just to love up the dogs and give them the attention they want helps in the long run. So I always have people coming in and out of here wanting to go on dog runs. And if they're going to want to go on a dog run, I'm going to make sure they know how to use a shovel too.
Yeah, they gotta pick up the poop before they run the dogs. I think that's paramount in any mushing scene. So
yeah, that's what these kids got to realize, that they, you know, we're doing a lot of fun out there on the trail, but it's the day to day living that gives you the chance to have that opportunity to run the dogs on the trail. It's how you create your little canine community in your area that really is what your life's going to be about in the long run, and their lives, obviously.
So for folks that may be new to the show, Hugh, how many hours a day do you think you spend out there, not on the sled or on the ATV, but just with the dogs in general? How many hours are we talking about?
Oh, I don't know, pretty much my whole life. I don't have a TV set. I'll rent a movie at night and watch a movie, but I'm not, you know, watching TV anymore. I don't think that TV is very good for humans. So I spend as much time as I can. You know, I gotta do organizing book sales or what have you, or traveling on the internet. So obviously, I think we all spend a lot more time on the internet these days. But the rest of the time, I'm traveling in and out that front door. Half the time, if the puppies aren't loose, I'll have the front door wide open. So the dogs, all my dogs are pretty much indoor dogs too. I know a lot of mushers don't necessarily agree with that, but for me, my dogs are my buddies. They're the reason I'm in Alaska. So I'm not just their caretaker. I also want to be their friend, and I want to make sure that they can hang out on a couch just as well as me, as long as they're not, you know, wanting to mark everything.
So let's talk a little bit about your dogs, Hugh. You had mentioned that you're out there on your swing set with a group of puppies. Who are these guys? How old are they? Where are they from? What's the potential in them?
I got Fred and Ginger, our brother and sister. Ginger's gorgeous looking. She sort of looks like Lester, that brown-eyed or brown fur dog that everybody loves to take pictures of. So she's a mix with a Robert Thorley dog that Brent Sasta let me borrow, her and her brother. And then over on the other side, I got Parker and his brother Earl, and they're a different mix out of John Baker lines with my Annie lines, Lester Earhart dogs. So, you know, I've always had a fairly fast kennel, and I enjoy the speed and everything, but the way the weather is nowadays, you need a dog that is tougher more than faster. It's really not about speed as much anywhere, especially when you don't have that much snow on the ground in some of these races. So I don't really worry about speed as much anymore. I'm looking for fur, good feet, and obviously a good appetite helps too.
And how old are these guys, the ones you're hanging out with this morning?
Oh, 4 months. So they're, you know, they're about 20 pounds, right around there, gnawing on bones right now. They're just past that teething stage. So the teething stage I'm not into, because they basically just want to nip at anything that's within a foot of their mouth. But once you get past that teething stage, they just want to run around and play. You really need to let these dogs out there to loose, to run around, to get that aggression off of them, or else they're just going to be messing with each other all the time.
And how long until they're ready to run when you're putting them in harness and they're on the team for the first time?
You know, every musher is different. If I'm going to put them in a harness, they're not going to run more than a mile or two, that's for sure. But typically, you know, 7-8 months, somewhere in there. And I usually have somebody that's helped me out, will help me with the pups, because they take a lot more attention. You really can't put them with your main team. Obviously, you're going to put them with some of your retired old-timers, like Oscar or Bogart or some of my older boys that are what I call my geezers. And they're going to hopefully just keep them under control. Because, you know, when you put these puppies typically in harness right off the bat, they're going in every direction. And it takes a while for them to figure out, oh, I just need to go forward, and it's a lot easier. So that's still a few months off. We'll do that probably when I get back from my trip to Europe. But right now it's just all about day-to-day, you know, exercise, feeding them 3 times a day. And the more attention they get, I definitely believe the greater an animal you're creating.
You know, Hugh, one of the questions that folks always ask me is how we come up with the names for our puppies. How do you choose?
It's a combo. Like Ginger is brown. And my neighbor, Sergeant Wells, he's a trooper, so I figured, well, Fred and Ginger, Freddie and Ginger. And then my other puppy I named Maurice after another of our troopers we have here in Tok. Obviously, I don't know, you know, people in Radioland probably don't understand, but unfortunately we had a couple of troopers a few months back that lost their lives in the line of duty, and they were actually, one of them was from this area, so... It's a big deal for me to support the troopers. I've been wearing trooper patches on my Parker for years now. And as Alaskans, you know, we all want our freedom, but we all have to respect the law and realize that these guys are just as much Alaskans as we are.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, everybody's been inoculated to the troopers by watching it on the reality show there.
Yeah, it's so funny. Every time I do a talk every night, I can... talk about where I've lived or somebody I know and tell them what reality TV show they're on. So whether it's Yukon Men, I used to live in Tanana, whether it's Ice Road Truckers, I used to work in Coldfoot, Ultimate Survival Alaska, I know Dallas TV, I mean, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
Which is funny because you know, when I was back in Chicago, everybody made fun of me for moving to Alaska. And now they're all back in the cities watching about Alaska on TV, so you wonder why they're making fun of us.
Has anybody ever contacted you, Hugh, to say we want to do a reality show with you in it?
Oh, yeah, right after I got back from my Iditarod. That's why I made sure to get a new phone, so it's pretty hard for people actually to contact me. I really enjoy my privacy. And I didn't come up here to, you know, do a reality show. And, you know, obviously I'm on Facebook a lot. I would like to wean myself from that. It's fun to show off the dogs for, you know, people around the world and stuff. But I didn't really come to Alaska to play show and tell every day. And for me, I really came up here to be a man of the woods and the wilderness. So one of these days, if I ever slow down on the racing scene, I'd love to just go off in the woods and live along a river in a nice tiny cabin with a nice 10 or 12 dog team and just, you know, live the old Jeremiah Johnson lifestyle. But that's a ways off, I think.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your talks again, in particular the ones that you do in town. You are really the first person that a lot of folks are talking to when they enter Alaska, at least on the Alaska Highway there. What are some of the things that these folks are asking you these days, besides their education that they're getting from reality shows? What are some of the things they want to know from you, Hugh?
How do you pay for it all?
There you go.
And then, of course, the Europeans predominantly, I think, I'll tell you a story. There's a joke about some RVers, you know, campers come to Alaska. The American RVers, they pull into their RV campground and they plug in their RV and they go inside and they prepare their meal and they turn on their TV and watch the news. The Europeans, they pull into the same RV park. They don't plug in their RV. They just pull out a picnic cloth and put down a picnic cloth on a table and pull out a bottle of wine and enjoy the sunset. So I think it behooves anybody coming to Alaska to just try to lose technology and get, you know, be one with what you're seeing because it's a magical place. So the Europeans really appreciate the openness that we have here. I think the Americans, a lot of them actually sort of fear it. They fear the woods. But when I talk to folks, I try to explain to them that, you know, even though I had a difficult time and I did it out this year, most of the time when we're out on these trails out in the middle of nowhere, we're so in touch with life and the universe that we're thrilled to be out there. We're not afraid to be out there. And some people pick up on that. Others, you know, they hear about us running even 20 miles with a dog team, and they're thinking, oh, those poor dogs, they have to run 20 miles. And I have to explain to them that the dogs that are not having as much fun are the ones that are staying at home. It's not the dogs that are out on the trail playing around.
Right. And 20 miles is nothing for a dog team. That's just getting them warmed up and ready to go.
Oh, yeah. And I definitely start off the bat talking to people about the local area, about my love of the native lifestyle. I really talk a lot, to be quite honest, about Dawson City. I mean, the more I've been up here nearly 20 years now, and I just realized this summer, believe it or not, just driving there a couple of weeks ago, that Dawson City is the closest town to Dawson City is Tok, Alaska. So we're about 4.5 hour drive from here. And I just love Dawson City, and it's the reason I do the quest every year, and I'm just blown away that more Iditarod munchers don't do the quest because they have no idea what they're missing out on. And I feel sorry for them. You really have to be there to understand what I'm talking about, but like being inside of a Jack London novel when you get there. It's a pretty magical place.
That it is. And for folks that don't know, that is pretty much the midway point, I guess you would say, on the quest. In years past, you guys spent a day and a half there. They've changed that a little bit now. It's down to 24 hours. Is that right?
Yeah. So I'll tell you a funny story, man. You know, I'm a bit of a mouth. In fact, in the Iditarod this year, every checkpoint I came into the Iditarod officials would be like, hey, Hugh, would you mind going over and talking, saying a few words to the media for us? Because I know I try to put a good spin on everything. Anyhow, I didn't sign up for the Quest yet because I never sign up for the Quest right away. I like to let the newbies and the younger mushers get involved first so they can get a little bit more coverage and all that. And maybe by me not signing up, I'll get some other big-name mushers to sign up from down southern Alaska. So I get back, you know, after they had sign-ups for the Quest a couple weeks ago, and everybody in town has asked me, when are you signing up? When are you signing up? And I didn't understand why they're all asking me this. And then I found out there is actually a blurb in the paper in Fairbanks about how I hadn't signed up for the race.
Ah.
Which, for me, I thought was comical because, you know, I'm trying to – I know I'm going to get my media attention this year and all that because of what happened when I did it wrong. But I'm not really into the whole mushing world just to be talked about on social media. So I thought it was comical. But for everybody that's been asking me, I will be signing up for the Yukon Quest. The Quest is my heart and soul. I just love that race. There's no hurries, no worries. And the Quest field looks awesome this year so far, and I'm hoping we'll get some more teams to sign up here.
Is there a team limit on the Quest, or is it pretty much open like I did a rod?
No, they've got 40 teams, I believe, is the limit, or maybe 50, but I think they've only reached that maybe or come close to reaching it once. Yeah, I also think it's 50. One year they might have had like 41 mushers, maybe about back in the early days. A lot of that has to do with space in the villages and just personnel. You know, the Iditarod has a much larger budget than the Quest. And the Quest folks, God bless them, you know, are doing a lot more with a lot less manpower. So I always advise folks, it's nice to be a volunteer for the Iditarod, but, you know, there's other races in Alaska that can use help as well.
So for folks that don't know, the Quest alternates years from going to Fairbanks to Whitehorse, then Whitehorse to Fairbanks. This year going from Whitehorse to Fairbanks, which way do you like finishing, Hugh, whether it's in Fairbanks this year or Whitehorse last year?
Oh, it's all relative, really. I love them both. I would say as far as, you know, I've lived in Fairbanks for on and off for 6 or 7 years, so have lots of friends there, and obviously Fairbanks is a lot closer to Anchorage, where we have to be the following week to get ready for Iditarod. So logistically, it's probably a little bit easier to finish up in Fairbanks. Your summits are going to be a little bit more challenging because it's a little bit of a steeper grade, and the weather can be just as challenging in either direction. I love Dawson, love Whitehorse. So I love finishing up in Canada too, but sometimes the weather can warm up too much and they have to shorten the race a little bit, as we had last year. But either way, it's all relative, but it is a different race going both ways. And definitely, I think the 24-hour mandatory now instead of 36 might shift people's gears a little bit. And we'll see, though. As much as we all, you know, talk a certain way, and then when we're out on the trail, we tend to live by our testosterone levels. So we'll see what happens when we get out there. I know Brent's quite motivated after last year, and, you know, Alan's always the man to beat. He puts every ounce of his body into every inch of the race. I've never seen a guy work so hard pretty much the whole race. He's working out, so he's a machine to try to keep up with, but we'll see how it goes. I got a decent team. I've got solid squad that I've had in the past, and I've got some newbies that are going to be put into the mix, so it'll be a lot of fun. And that's why I race every year, because I know by racing and doing these races every year that it's actually behooves you, because your dogs are going to have less stress on them because they know what they're up to. They know where they're going.
One final question, Hugh. We got about 5 minutes left. A lot of talk, of course, on all of the social media amongst the mushers and everybody else is climate change and weather patterns and that sort of thing. How do you address that as we're going into winter? How is that going to affect training if we don't get any snow, at least like we did down here? We didn't get any snow until February, really. Then we got a big dump right before Iditarod. How do you plan for that? Obviously, weather's changing, and it's different than it has been in years past.
Well, I already planned for it. That's why I live in Tok. I mean,
there you
go. A lot of mushers made fun of me for moving here, and they don't realize the reason I moved to Tok is there's endless supplies of wood to heat my cabin with around here. We've had lots of fire burn. There's a glacial river running underneath Tok, so we got the best water I've ever drank in anywhere in the world. I've got great trails to here for limited 20-mile, 30-mile runs around town, and then I can jump on the top of the world and go 170 to 200 miles in each direction if I want to go to Dawson or Eagles. So there's definitely a reason why I moved to this part of Alaska. It's colder, but, you know, with the cold, your snow's going to stay longer. And as a musher, if you want to be competitive, you really have to figure out how you're going to go to the spots where the snow is at. Yeah, obviously, you have a beautiful new dog box that you just made this past couple of weeks. I'm pretty impressed, man. I think everybody is. It's one of the nicest dog boxes I've ever seen. So you need to put that to good use and come on up and visit me, and we'll go on some monster runs together.
That's the plan. I want to be able to do some traveling. You know, when I just had my little 8-dog box, it was tough to get a full team in there and be able to travel where we want to go. So that's the plan with our box. It's kind of a make it or break it year for us here. So we're looking forward to coming up and visiting you and whatnot. So Hugh, real quickly, I know after Europe, you're also heading out on a very quick school tour down south. When is that happening, and can folks still sign up to get a talk in?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be meeting up with my fellow Quest Iditarod mushers, Mike Ellis and Brent Sass, for a show in Oregon. And then my buddy Neil Bowen, who's planning on doing some racing here not too soon, future, is putting together some shows for me in Park City, Utah. And that's all going to be happening in late October. If people are interested in setting up a gig with me, they live in either of those areas, they can send me a message at laughingeyeskennel@hotmail.com. And basically anyone who's ever interested in having a mushroom show, just let me know where you live, and I'll let you know if I'm going to be heading your way. I plan my schedule so that I train really pretty much 3 weeks straight a month. And then a week out of that month, I'll go and do talk somewhere in the country. And it's a great schedule. It simulates racing in a way for the dogs, and it also gives them a nice recovery period as well. And I've been doing that the last couple of years. So I'll be going to Rapid City and other parts of the country later on, probably December-ish, and still working on doing a tour in Hawaii too, believe it or not. So lots going on, but, you know, I've got a book that people are really been flying off the shelves that people enjoy. And so I'm trying to take advantage of the opportunity to get out there and show off my dogs to the rest of the world.
Well, Hugh, always been a pleasure. We'll definitely keep in touch. And when you're down this way, we'll hook up, okay?
Yeah. I was going to let you know, Robert, I have to come down and get some red paw here in the next couple of weeks. So I'll definitely swing through, and maybe we'll take your dogs for a run.
There you go. If it's cold enough, we'll be out there. Hugh Neff from Laughing Eyes Kennel today on his show, The Gypsy Musher. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.
Later.